Looking for fast-paced tales of action, adventure, sci-fi, mystery, and crime? Look no further than Telling Stories, the weekly podcast that brings you a free full-length drama each week in five daily episodes. Tune in to hear the world's great stories performed by America's greatest storytellers. Look for Telling Stories, the podcast, right here on Podcast One and iTunes.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who's been podcasting about Survivor for so long, I was a millennial when we started. Rob Sestrino, hello everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And it's a pre-season feedback show, and I'm very excited to have a man here with us. One of the top voicemail people in the entire world. Please welcome back. Give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom.
Millennial Mike is in Millennial the hizzle. Yes. Should I add that onto my ever-growing list of names?
What
Millennial Mixmaster Mike Bloomizzle.
Mike Bloomizzle.
Anita Francesca Bobana the Third, but you can call me Dot. I just feel like, I mean, you can call me really anything at this point. I'll respond to it.
All right. Well, Mike, so happy to have you back. I had this idea, and I figured that, like, we finished the Corinne podcast. We posted that on Tuesday. I felt like 8 days in between then and the start of the new season was too long to go without a Survivor podcast. We did about two preseason podcasts a week all the way through the preseason. So I figured we just put a bow on this off-season, preseason, and then before you know it, it'll be Wednesday night, and we'll be watching Millennials versus Gen Xers.
I'm even more thrilled because you promised me a participation trophy to come on and do this podcast,
yes,
right?
Yes. As a millennial, that is your right to get a participation trophy and be here on the podcast. Mike, how's everything been going?
Everything's been going well. I don't know if you feel the same way, Rob, but this summer has felt long.
Long
for some
summer.
Reason. Maybe I was also felt a little like starved by a lack of substantial reality TV content, but now I feel like we have hit the full all-you-can-eat buffet here between this, Survivor Australia three times a week, Big Brother OTT. We are sumptuously feasting on all the reality TV that is coming our way come fall.
All right, well, let's just set up the stage, of course. On Wednesday night, it's going to be the premiere of Millennials versus Gen X. That we will have a Survivor Know-It-Alls, but it will not be with yours truly, because Stephen Fishback will be live with Josh Wiggler to talk about the premiere episode. I am going to be at the Big Brother 18 finale, which some Survivor purists are not going to understand that, but I am going to be at the finale and I'm going to do interviews in the backyard with the winner and that whole cast of Big Brother 18. So I'm going to just take one night off of the Know-It-Alls, and then I will be back with exit interviews and our podcast, our first recap of the season, where I will be speaking with the winner of Survivor Koh Rong, Michelle Fitzgerald.
Wow. Starting from, I guess, the most recent and working our way back. Are we then
top
going
of
just
the order,
the,
baby?
Yeah, boot order of Survivor Koh Rong to the bottom. Then we'll cycle through Cambodia. These poor survivors from Survivor Borneo, we probably won't get to them until
no, not
like
for a while.
2025.
Not until we get to the second merge of Survivor Australia.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe by then they'll be primed. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to podcast.
And then we'll also get to voicemails. We'll be recording those on Friday. So then the rest of the week is going to be probably a day behind just to accommodate the crazy schedule of the Big Brother finale. So I will get to the voicemails on Friday that we will kick it off with. The tabulator, Kurt Clark, will join me for the voicemails. And I'll probably get that posted like Friday night or Saturday as we round out the first week of the Survivor podcast starting next week. How about that, Mike?
Kurt should be a fun guest because this season might prove that age is just a number, or is it? So having a master of the numbers probably fits in very well with the beginning parts of this season.
Well, and Mike, the other thing I want to just get out there, I'm very excited about that we are switching over robhasawebsite.com to a brand new theme. So if you have a chance this weekend to check that out, hopefully everything will be in place for people to visit us and see the new format of the site that we have in place for Survivor 33. I figured there might be a lot more millennials coming to the site. Didn't want to have a Gen X looking site anymore.
Yeah, which theme are you switching over to? Is it brains versus brawn versus beauty? Are we doing have versus have nots?
Worlds apart. Worlds apart.
Oh, perfect. I can't wait for the no-color section of the website. It's going to be a lot of free-form stuff that's going to be hard to decipher, but I guess you have to serve many masters when you do that.
It's going
to
be wacky. Anyway, Mike, real quick, I know not everybody who's listening to this is watching Australian Survivor, but that's something we've been talking about on the podcast. I listened to you over the last couple of weeks you were on with Dom Harvey on the Dom and Colin show to talk about it. I heard you talking about it for a little bit. Are you into the Australian Survivor?
Absolutely. I am 100% in on Australian Survivor, in spite of what some might feel is its ever-growing broadcast schedule. I've been able to keep up as of this moment, and if you can, at least you have a nice backlog to satiate you by the time you're able to get some more free time. But I feel like this is a great season for fans of both old school and new school Survivor tactics. I think the cast is absolutely A+, and in spite of the ballooning size of it, they've been able to really build out a story for everyone. Production is certainly trying things out, and I think they've worked to varying proportions. Mm. But I've never not been entertained by a Survivor Australia, an Australian Survivor episode, even in spite of some of the outcomes that might come about from some episodes, or lack of outcomes, I should say.
Yeah, I know you were kind of down on, you felt like it was too twisty, but that wasn't an issue that I had with the show. I enjoy it. Spice it up. Give me something different.
Well, and we also made the comparison to Big Brother Canada of how I think a lot of these international equivalents of English-speaking American counterparts of a reality shows, they sort of have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder in that they need to both honor the original incarnation while simultaneously kind of putting itself out on its own track and saying, I'm my own special snowflake, to also quote a millennial trope. And so I think twists are definitely one way to do it. I don't know. I just feel like, I still feel like the show should have confidence in itself and the people that they cast to sort of let sleeping dogs lie. And of course, I'm saying that right now when, spoiler alert, we've had basically an oolonging going on for the past three episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's fun to talk about and to check out. Stephen Fishback and I have been recapping that as well over on our Australian Survivor Know-It-Alls, as we've been doing that once a week on Tuesdays. All right. So Mike, today I figured this would be fun to check in with you and to get together and sort of close out the preseason / off season. I invited people to send us in voicemails, but we'll just talk about a couple of different, you know, broad topics going into Wednesday night in this season. Is there anything that's really top of mind for you concerning Survivor 33 as we approach the premiere?
I mean, I have tried to take in as much preseason content as I can. Obviously, you put out a great number of staples with your breakdown with Josh, this two-part one with Nicole, with Angie, with Corinne. I read over the RHAP bloggers' long-term retrospective. I tried to read as much of Josh's interviews and Gordon Holmes' interviews. I listened to the intergenerational one on reality TV.
Wow, wrap-ups. Look at you,
just
Mike.
Just to cover my bases, I interviewed a newborn. I interviewed Rudy Bosch to get their opinions. I'm not allowed back in their homes, but I think that's besides the point. I am.
You know, I don't even know what a millennial is, and I hope I never do.
And I will not buy what you're selling, sir. So please get out.
Yeah. You know, I thought these Gen Xers were lazy. Boy, I didn't even know.
I hope this is a nice parlay into Rudy going on Last Comic Standing. That is really great fodder for his 5-minute set.
Yeah.
Rudy actually kind of sounds like your Roseanne Barr impression too.
You know what, basically, Mike, if you really like stringers, basically every single impression I have is pretty much the same voice. So it's really not, sometimes it's a little faster, sometimes it's a little, you know, there's not that much of a difference between any of them.
Secrets revealed on this podcast. Really showing how the sausage gets made here. Yeah. It's all coming from the same animal is what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. You have a good sense of everything from the preseason content. So what are you thinking about now that you've understood everything?
I mean, at the same time, as full to the brim as I am with this preseason content, you absolutely know all of my and all of our opinions are going to change before the first commercial break of this season. So we'll see if it's all for naught. But so far, I'd say, in spite of a questionable theme, I think this cast is pretty good on the whole. I actually do want to talk at the top about, you know, Jeff has talked about after San Juan del Sur and his hesitancy against it. He said, all right, from now on, we are getting the, we're casting first and then we're deciding the theme. But yes, here he told EW in an interview that I think got released yesterday, well, we flipped it back around again. I know it's testy, but we'll see. I would say looking at this cast overall, Rob, do you feel like you could almost tell that they were casting for the theme? Or do you really think that this cast could pass for, oh yeah, all 20 of these people were picked up and they just so happened to be, half of them were in the millennial age range and half of them happened to be sort of in the Gen X age range?
It's interesting because we saw that Jeff said that they weren't going to do that anymore. But then in that EW article you mentioned, he said that that's what they did. And it sort of was born out of Jeff saying and production saying, how do we get more millennials on the show? Where do we do that? And I guess Lynn Spillman accepted the challenge, and went out there and said, give me a month. Give me a month. I'll find you the top millennials out there. And that's where they ultimately got this cast from. But did you watch the part of the video? Did you watch the video on this, Mike?
I did.
Yes. And so Jeff said they had to go in and pitch this idea to CBS. And they said, we want to do a season that's about Gen X versus millennials. And CBS is like, we love it. It's a great idea, but we hate the name. It's a terrible name. The name should be Millennials versus Gen X.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit. I think Jeff is trying to build
it's
up.
Like a comedy sketch.
Yeah, there's a moment in The Social Network when I remember Justin Timberlake's character visits them and he's like, one more thing, drop the from Facebook. Just call it Facebook. And I think it's clear like Jeff was trying to make it that.
It's so crazy. It's like that you would think that they would say, no, that's a terrible name, but we convinced them it needed to be Millennials versus Gen X. Like the fact that it was like, no, Gen X versus Millennials is hot garbage. It needs to be Millennials versus Gen X. That's it.
Nobody's going to watch a show called Gen X versus Millennials.
That's the worst name we ever heard. It needs to be Millennial. You don't put the Gen X before the Millennials. Nobody will watch.
Well, maybe this fuels the rivalry more, though, because then, you know, someone like Paul will take a look at the flag and be like, of course the Millennials have to come first. They always have to come first.
Yes, yes. That's just so funny to me that that was the name they went with. Like they threw out a different name.
For some reason, I have this like idea of a montage where like you have all these people in suits just ruminating over this title with a whiteboard in the boardroom, and then somebody just draws an arrow between the two words to flip them, and everyone just goes crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Give this man a raise.
Let me get into our first voicemail because it's somewhat connected to this. This is from Ariel, who has a question about how the theme was divided. Here's Ariel.
Hi, Rob and Mike. This is Ariel. It was picked up on in most of the cast assessments how there seem to be many people in the religious Venn diagram and a number of players who have either had major medical issues or family members with medical issues. Do you think that they were maybe considering a theme of people versus faith versus people versus science? What other ways or themes could you imagine this group of players being cast for other than categorized by their generations? I'm looking forward to another great season of Survivor and podcasts. Thanks.
Mike, would you have signed on for a men and women of science versus men and women of faith season?
Not if Jack Shepard and John Locke are not involved. You need to have Matthew Fox and Terry O'Quinn captain those tribes.
Yeah, that would be good. I had heard rumblings in the spring when they were talking about this cast. And I don't know if this was just complete speculation or rumor, or maybe that there's like some whispers of something that was a hint of truth. But I had heard the possibility of a season that was sort of conservative versus liberals. And I am so happy that we did not go in that direction. But I do wonder maybe if that was sort of a way that you have some people where that if you could imagine what those tribes would look like. It wouldn't be like sort of old versus young and think you'd move some people around, but you could maybe see that potentially you could draw the line there and make those two tribes.
Yeah, I think the most legitimate theme we could see from this cast is Christians versus Cochrans, where you have one group of people who are very based in that religion versus people who think they're John Cochran. Could you imagine, Jeff? Cochrans win immunity.
Yes. Yes. Favorites. I mean, Cochran's. Where did
I mean, heroes. I don't know anymore.
Boy, Christians versus Cochran's. That's the front runner for the hashtag right now, Mike.
Wait a minute. But what if it's Cochran's versus Christians?
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking. Now that's something. Now we got something. Mike, I know you had said before, right before we came on, that you wanted to talk about that there was the video that was posted as part of the Bill Simmons Any Given Wednesday this week. Did you have a chance to watch that?
I did, and that's probably the only sports-related content I'll look at for a good 6 months. This was sent to us. Bill Simmons, as you said, has that Any Given Wednesday show on HBO, but he randomly dedicated a 3-minute segment, I guess, on this week's episode to why Jeff Probst is the greatest reality host of all time and how... why he has not gotten his due by the Emmy Awards, even though he's already won a couple of Emmy Awards, Bill. But he still goes on to talk about basically one of the reasons why Probst is such a good host is he compares it to the sports world about how, you know, imagine a commentator trying to talk over a 2-hour water relay, I think is what he said. He brings up, you know, he's able to rock bad necklaces and have stupid cowboy hats. He compares him to Tim Duncan, who... I have no idea who Tim Duncan is, but he seems like a nice person.
Basketball player.
His brother apparently edits the Survivor intros.
Well, that was the thing that really blew my mind, where that there's a guy who films the intros as far, and I'm not sure if he still does. I want to say that maybe I'm talking completely out of school that he doesn't do that job anymore. But that guy who I remember from being on the beach in Survivor, you know, in the All-Stars and in the Amazon, that I had no idea that guy was Tim Duncan's brother.
Wait, so he was on the beach. Was he a cameraman, or was he, like, planning out shots of nature to use in the intro?
No, he's a guy, and I think that he does, like, a different process. Like, the people that there's, like, cameraman, and they have, like, their video camera. I think this guy might have been shooting on film. And so this guy walks around, and they say, okay, well, this is the guy who does the intro. And he, like, walks around, and he does, like, his own separate project. He's not, like, getting footage from the, you know, the camera people necessarily. He's, like, he's doing his own thing. I had no idea that guy is Tim Duncan's brother. I feel like that some people are probably a little bit at a loss as to what we're talking about. So let me just add a little more explanation that Bill Simmons, who is a commentator who really got started on ESPN, he has a show on HBO called Any Given Wednesday. And it's like an interview show. But then there's like one part where he does sort of like kind of like a rant. Last week, he talked about like Big Poppy is so great. Like, Big Poppy is a great retirement tour. I don't want him to retire. He's the greatest guy ever. And then, it's like peppered in with jokes and like footage. I really don't think the segment works particularly well, but he happened to do this sort of like Bill Simmons's take about something about Jeff Probst this week. And so it was interesting. Because Bill Simmons, I don't believe, is currently an active Survivor watcher. He certainly has talked about Survivor quite a bit in the past, but I really feel like that Heroes versus Villains was the last season I've ever heard him talk about on any of his podcasts. I don't feel like he is kept up with Survivor, even though there has been some Survivor coverage on his podcast networks over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and it's interesting in that even though you said he might have stopped watching Survivor in 2010, all the footage that's used showing Probst at his, you know, most valorous are from recent seasons. They even talk about how, you know, Probst handled the triple collapse situation from Ko Rong. So maybe he has someone on staff who's a big Survivor fan and said, oh yeah, you gotta do a Jeff Probst segment. The interesting part of the segment to me was that one of the reasons why the narrator brought up that Probst was the greatest of all time is one of the reasons why actually a lot of people are sort of opposed to Jeff Probst nowadays are when he gets into people's conversations and starts needling them and makes fun of them. So, you know, I guess to each his own, one man's trash is another man's treasure that Paul will eventually find on the beach after spring break.
Yeah, it's a weird segment on the Bill Simmons show because you can tell just by the fact that Bill Simmons is not watching Survivor week in and week out that he probably did not write most of this himself, but he's sort of delivering this monologue about this subject. So it's odd. It's a weirdly produced thing, but good for Jeff Probst to get some recognition. He tweeted about it today to Bill. He said, this was one of the funniest things ever. Again, it's not really hilarious.
No.
It's like, it's not really a huge, like, laugh line, anything there.
I think he was laughing at the zinger that they posted where he told Alicia from One World that his nephew could throw better than him. He's like, oh, that was a great barb. Put me on the dais, Comedy Central.
I mean, look, we'll give you a couple seconds of it.
She's hosted all 32 seasons of Survivor without ever aging. It's an amazing feat. If I spent that much time outside in the tropics, I'd look like the guy from Castaway. He's mastered the catchphrase.
They will be taken and executed.
He's not afraid to ask pointed questions.
Are you quitting this game?
Maybe. I don't know.
Stir up trap.
I mean, it's like funny-ish.
And why did he say his catchphrase was they will be taken and executed? That Jeff, he only said it for that one challenge in that one middle season.
Everybody is like can we make this funnier? Like the editor is trying to be like, Bill Simmons isn't editing that. He's sort of like, he's recording this in a booth. The editor is trying to make it funny. So everybody's hoping we can add something to this that eventually it'll be funny, but good for Jeff Probst to get the recognition. And I do think that Bill Simmons is onto something that, you know, when somebody is truly great for a long enough time, they start to get ignored. And whatever new thing that comes, like, oh, this thing is great. But it's like, oh, well, this guy has been, you know, really, really good for a very long time. And now you know, it's just that he's not new. Doesn't mean he's not great anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when Bob Barker retired from The Price is Right. Obviously, there was a good middle chunk there where we sort of lived our lives knowing the safety that Bob Barker was always going to be on The Price is Right. And so we sort of ignored him and moved on to newer, brighter, and shinier things. But once we found out he was leaving, then we sort of swarmed back around him. I feel like if and when Jeff Probst does decide to end his tenure with Survivor, a similar type of thing will happen.
Okay, let's get into another question. Let's check in with our good buddy, Pod Vader. Also used to work at the same place as Bill Simmons. Let's play Pod Vader.
Hey, Rob and Mike, it's Pod Vader here. Had a question for you about your strategy going into a Survivor pool. Every year there's about five or six of us, so we get to make multiple picks going into the season. We get to watch episode one, and then we all have a draft. And it works like a snake, one through five, five through one through five again. So what would be the strategy here? Should I take only millennials? that's silly because we all know Gen X is going to win this thing. But what would your strategy be in this type of a draft? All right. Love you, Bay. Ooh, was that too Gen X of me? Because that was a few seasons ago. Hope not.
I like that Pod Vader is like really invested in Gen Xers winning Survivor this season.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why they came up with this theme and why they decided to not subtitle it is they really wanted to cause a flare up. I'll admit, I know Angie said on your podcast that she doesn't feel like any new people will be brought into the fold, but there are a few of my friends who legitimately told me like, oh, the theme is interesting enough that I might want to pursue actually watching Survivor.
Whoa.
Yeah, though admittedly, I mean, we can talk later about my, like, tangential connection to Zeke through the New York comedy community, but that might be part of it as well.
Okay. All right. Well, Mike, then, in terms of strategy going into a Survivor pool, do you have any tips for somebody who is going to be doing some sort of Survivor draft over these next couple of days?
Well, I mean, I feel like in the first round, I think, you know, people always think there are probably four or five individuals right at the top, right, that you think stand a very good chance of winning the game. They're obviously going to go in the first round. This might be coming from a person that does not know too much about drafts, but I feel like the second round is when you kind of got to wow them with an unconventional pick. And
why?
I mean, who knows? Maybe if you pick number one, and that means that you're going to have the number 10 pick once it loops back around to you, mm-hmm. You're not going to have many people left. So you might want to, you know, take a chance and pick up somebody that some might consider the bottom of their power rankings that could surprise us and actually do well.
This is terrible advice, Mike.
I don't know. This is coming from a non-sports person. But well. Don't you feel like there is like that one person every season who does surprisingly better than everyone thought they would do?
Sure. I think there's probably that person, but I think that if you end up with that person, that's fine, but I wouldn't draft them early ahead of people that you think might actually do good, because the beauty of that person is that they're probably going to still be on the board later on. You don't want to take them early, this sort of person that nobody thought would win. Then even if you have a good feeling about them, take them when the draft comes back around to you later on, because they'll still be there.
Well, maybe you can also prove to your opponents that you have unpredictable behavior, so then they can't predict your next moves. That's probably more of a poker analogy than it really is a,
right,
a drafting analogy. But
it's how the Jets draft. Right.
Yeah, exactly. This is why I should not be in charge of any fantasy teams anytime soon. With regards to whether you should draft, you know, all millennials or all Gen Xers, I mean, you could stay on the safe side, and assuming if you're picking like four people each, you could split between the two, but I don't know, looking at this lineup personally, I think that you might want to slide a certain amount more towards picking millennials over Gen Xers. If you end up with three millennials, one Gen Xer overall, I feel like that's a pretty good draw.
I think that my best advice for somebody going into a draft, I think that what you want to do is sort of just take a look at the board, take a look at all the names. And then I think then what I would do is just like eliminate the people you feel like under no circumstances can win. The people that you feel like, all right, this person is just way too crazy. They can't win. They can't win. They can't win. They can't win. And then after a certain point, everybody's pretty much the same. You have no idea going into a draft from last season, like, oh, that Michelle was going to be the winner. But you probably could have like eliminated a bunch of people that you say, okay, well, that guy's definitely not going to win. Okay, this person definitely isn't going to win. And unlike Nicole Stradamus, who made one of those people into her winner pick for the season, I think once you sort of like weed out, okay, let's just take all the real crazies out of the mix, then chances are the winner is going to be from one of those 10 people that you have left.
Yeah, the chaff is probably going to have someone rise to the top in a way. Now, should you play the meta aspects a little? Should you take a look at, for example, when Jeff assessed the cast and pick people that he picks as someone who stands out? Because you have to imagine that they'll go at least pretty far, at least most of the time.
Can I tell you something about that? I don't watch Jeff's cast assessment when he does that, because I don't know when he films that. Again, if somebody told me, like, oh, this was recorded the day before the game started, then I just don't know, but I'm sort of like hesitant to go in and watch that following like Worlds Apart when Jeff was talking up Mike Holloway so much before the season started.
There is a way you can sort of play that aspect into your pick and say, okay, what does Jeff think of this season? As a result, what might it inform about the winner overall? And it's sad that we are able to do that purely from the mouth of one of the executive producers, but it's a thing that you can still work with.
I don't know. I haven't looked at it just because I kind of feel like I'd rather not know that stuff, but maybe who knows? I'm sure somebody will probably tell me at some point.
Yeah, there are people that he definitely highlights. I don't have, you know, a sheet in front of me saying what are the corroborating percentages of how well a person does based on whether Jeff hypes them up in the preseason assessment, but you have to assume it's a pretty positive correlation overall.
You would think so. I don't know if there's a person necessarily, and maybe somebody could go back and tell us that, is there somebody in the cast assessment that Jeff is like, absolutely, this person is terrible, that they have no shot whatsoever, and then they did really good. Maybe Spencer in Kagyan might be that person. He's like, I will write him a letter if he wins the game.
Yeah, though it seems like maybe after that, Jeff is more wary to those that might put on a certain persona during casting, so he's probably a little more reserved and says, I'm not going to get duped again like I did with Spencer and Kagyan.
So, Mike, what I have for us to do here today is I would like to have a draft with you here on our preseason finale special.
Oh, perfect. You could tell by my draft advice how well this is probably going to go for me.
Yes, and back when you drafted Sierra to not get a question at the Survivor Cambodia finale.
You were opening up that wound, Rob. You were rubbing the salt right in it.
Get it right in there. All right. So, Mike, I wanted to do a draft, but I felt like it might be a little on the nose to do the who's going to win the season draft at this point in time. Last season, Josh and I, on the first voice or the first wiggle room of the season, or maybe we did a preseason wiggle room of who is going to be medevaced from the season. But Mike, in the millennials versus Gen X season, I think it's very important that we pay attention to the social media this season. So Mike, my question to you is, I'd like to draft with you for hashtags this season. Who will be the players that get the most hashtags onto the show? Would you like to play in the hashtag draft?
Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. This is wonderful.
Okay. So we're picking, just so I'm aware, individuals that we think will get the most hashtags showing up in the lower third over the course of an episode of Survivor?
Yes, we want the most hashtags over the course of the season. I don't know. Let's just make it nice and simple. We'll do it Thug Dizzle. We'll just go ahead and 1 point per hashtag the whole season.
All right, that works.
Because there's a lot of factors here. You got to think about length. You got to think about who's going to give you a hashtag. Who's going to be thinking in those terms.
Yeah, because it's a nice balance because there are some of those bigger characters who, as you talked about with your own draft strategy to Pod Vader, they might not last a long time, so there might be a happy medium between the two. And like you said, there might be some people from this middle ground who might break out and have hashtags galore that we don't even know about. So there are definitely a lot of flat factors in play.
All right, let's each pick five people for the hashtag draft.
Okay. All right, do you want me to go first?
You go first, Mike. You get the first pick, and I'll get the second and the third pick. Who is the number one pick overall in the hashtag draft?
I feel like it's tough because I want to pick somebody that definitely made an impression going in, but I don't know if they're going to last that long. So it's a tough balance. You know what? I got to start with Zeke.
Got to go. He's the number one pick in the hashtag draft. Got to go, Zeke.
I mean, as someone from the comedy community, I feel like he knows how to get out a good quip, a good one-liner, a good phrase that sticks in your head, a good earworm, if you will. And him being a millennial, even though he said he hates Twitter, even though he has it, he's very social media conscious. So I feel like it's the best of both worlds.
That's good. Great first pick, Mike. So far, you're killing the draft. You're doing great.
One for one. Great.
One for one. Okay, so I have the second and the third pick in the hashtag draft. I will go with the second pick overall. Give me Paul. I don't know how much longevity he will have in the game, but you know he's going to say something kooky at least once an episode that he's there. So give me Paul with the second pick. And with the third pick, again, this might be a bit of an upset that I'm going with double Gen Xers. Give me David Wright, that I feel like if he's going for a Cochrane type thing, then give me David for the third pick.
No, I think those are good picks. I think those are the two probably most soundbite conducive people on that tribe. But like you brought up before, I think longevity is just a good
concern. It's
a gamble. But if we lose Paul and David in episodes 1 and 2, then you might have shot yourself in the foot.
Hey, look, go big or go home, Mike. Got to make big moves in the hashtag draft.
Yes, so says my unfortunate pick, Sierra, from the last draft we did.
Shut the front door.
All right, I'm not letting you in. You're not allowed in my home anymore, Sierra, after what you did. Or after what Propes did. He's the first one, Jeff, the first question you ask. I've had a year and a half to like marinate on this and finally get it all out on the podcast. Yes. So I'm steaming.
Yes.
All right, so it's my pick. I know I probably went with, even though he is a bit more of a character, the safer pick, but I might go someone more in line with you. Give me Hannah. I'll stick millennial. I don't know how she's going to do
animal
overall, but as long as we get her on that drum set, I think she's going to be giving out some fun quips.
Hashtag.
And then that's when Taylor Lee surfing the waves. It's the perfect accompaniment.
Yes. Okay. Great pick, Hannah, for number four. You have the fifth pick, Mike.
Okay. The question is, do I stick? You know what? I'll cross the boundaries a little bit. I'll cross streams. Let's jump over to Gen X. Give me Brett.
Oh, that's a great pick. I was going to take him too.
Yeah, I know I don't know what the extent of improv he does, but it seems like he's very sociable, and it seems like he probably has a couple of fun things saved up. And it seems like he has a personality to at least deliver something that would warrant a hashtag.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Boy, now this is where it gets tough here. Who else has a hashtag in the...
See, this is when you take my advice and you make a really unconventional pick that nobody will expect.
Yeah, nobody really jumps out to me as a hashtag gold, but maybe do we think that is it possible millennial snowboard instructor Taylor could have a few sicky, sicky narnars in him? Is it possible?
So as a millennial, I have never heard that phrase before, Rob. It's also like just speaking objectively about that as a slang phrase, it's horrible. Like, have you ever heard a piece of slang that repeats the same word twice? That's not a good piece of slang.
All right. So I'll go with Taylor, with TLS. Give me the Taylor Lee stalker with pick number six.
That sounds like a disease.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a TLS. And then for the seventh pick, boy, I'll go with Mari. Maybe Mari has some hashtags in her.
Yeah, I think when you're a YouTube gamer, you almost work for the likes and subscribes, right? And you sort of edit around delivering big moments that people will quote. So I think that makes sense in line with her career.
Yeah. And again, that the hashtags don't necessarily mean that a person has to be like intentionally going for the hashtag, but it just that usually is one that they will put up on the screen.
So it's back to me. I'm going to snap back to millennials for a hot sec, and I'm going to go with Michaela.
What hashtag is Michaela doing?
Well, I feel
Delilah. Hashtag Delilah.
Yes, I'm going to reference the Russell Hands, who did not directly interact with Michaela in her season. I'm really doing a deep dive here with that. I feel like Michaela might have shown herself to be...
that little hashtag.
See, at first I thought that was you doing a Brandon Hans impression before I remembered that Russell had... Russell did have a brief dalliance with Michaela as well, so I think that connection still holds true.
It's all Hans's talking about Michaela.
That's the word that's going around the Hans household at all times. Sean Hans got in there. Yes. I heard baby Hans just got born, and he tried to crawl.
That was
his
first word, was Michaela.
Yeah, he crawled his way into the Wiggle household, not the Wiggler household. Mm. I feel like Michaela has shown herself to be, albeit grounded, a little contentious at times, and I feel like if she does get fired up, she could... I don't know if it'll be on the levels of someone like Sydney in terms of soundbite quality, but I feel like she could definitely...
Well, that's all-time top tier of soundbite quality.
Exactly. I'm comparing her to the gold standard, but if she finishes in at least aluminum, I'll be happy with my fourth pick.
Aluminum naughty, yeah. All right. So then, Mike, who is your number nine pick?
Okay, so... All right, this is the last person on my team, so I guess
you have one more, I have one more.
You know what? Give me Will.
Will?
I feel like Will is going to get a lot of sound bites being a young kid, especially if he lasts far. I know he has the voice. Does he have the sound bites? I'm not entirely sure, but I feel like production would have enough fun with him that they'll at least eke out one hashtag from him.
All right. One hashtag from the millennial. And then I have the final pick in the draft, and I'm going to go with, give me CeCe.
Okay. Yeah, I was debating between
CeCe
Will and
Taylor.
CeCe. No, you already picked Taylor.
No, not TLS. CC Taylor.
Oh, okay. CT. CCT.
CCT, not TLS.
Just abbreviate everyone's names before
JJS,
you even start the season.
You got some initials out there. Yeah, so give me CC. All right, so here is Mike's team. Mike's hashtag team consists of Zeke, Hannah, Brett, Michaela, and Will. And again, there's no spoilers on this. Unless you're a CBS editor or on social media, then nobody knows the spoilers on this. Paul, David Wright, TLS, Mari Takahashi, and CeCe Taylor.
Yeah, so I slided quite millennial. I guess maybe that's in response to Pod Vader's Gen X bias. But you had a pretty even balance, but I guess we'll see as the season develops. I mean, I know we have a crack team out there that will hopefully track it as the season progresses.
Yes, if somebody is interested in tracking this, please let me know if you want to be our official hashtag draft scorekeeper. Shoot me an email for this, survivor@robiswebsite.com. That's a new email address that you'll be able to use this season and send in feedback for the show, especially for the long-form interviews. I want to get better at collecting questions from you guys to ask on these shows. survivor@robiswebsite.com. And that is the hashtag draft, which is a great segue to talk about this weekend, Mike, DraftKings.com. They've got another week of fantasy football. And Mike, if you're bad at drafting in a snake draft, maybe going to DraftKings.com might change your luck, because that DraftKings is hosting another free fantasy contest this weekend. $100,000 in total prizes up for grabs with no deposit required. You heard that right, Mike. Put your fantasy knowledge to the test for free to win your share of 100 grand this weekend at DraftKings.com. Mike, you don't even have to have any hashtags.
Oh, perfect. I'm entirely glad I don't need to bring my social media into my fantasy life.
Yes, because DraftKings is the destination for one-week fantasy football. No season-long commitments. Just play when you want with the players you want. Just pick your contest, draft your players, and follow your team live. You could renew old rivalries. Mike, do you have any rivals that you would play fantasy football with?
I'm trying to think. I'm sure there are many that would like
Penner,
to tackle
the
me to the
Penner impression.
Ground. Yes, I'll re-engage my rivalry with your Penner impression over a game of fantasy football.
Mike, you're
going to
be
idea,
dead meat
once I get through with you.
Right until I draft JL3.
I'm the superior GM.
Yes. You could try out a 50-50 contest where the top half of all entries win cash, whether you're a one-week fantasy rookie like Mike or a grizzled vet Gen X like a Pod Vader. DraftKings offers fun, free, fair contests for you all season long. So hurry to DraftKings.com now. Use promo code Rob and play for free in this weekend's $100,000 fantasy contest. That contest is free. No deposit required, so there's no reason not to play. Again, promo code Rob and play for free for your share of 100 grand this weekend only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details. All right, Mike, we've got another question we want to jump into. This is a question that comes to us from one of our listeners, Don, who wants to get your take on some of the characters of this season.
Hey, Robin, Mike, I just have a question about Will, the 18-year-old. Don't you just think he's going to be too impressionable, you know, because of his really distinctive voice? No? Okay. Bad joke. Okay. Sorry. But in all seriousness, who do you think in this cast of millennials and Gen Xers will give you the most material for the podcast this year in terms of sound bites and just ridiculous character moments? Thanks.
All right. So a little bit building on what we were talking about with the hashtags, Mike. Who do you think is going to be giving us the most character moments and sound bites this season?
Well, I do want to speak off of Will briefly in spite of Don's, what I thought was a very admirable pun.
Yes.
His voice can't be real, right?
That's real.
I mean, don't you? Isn't there a chance that he's like a ventriloquist dummy and that there's some man hiding behind the trees with that deep voice? I've never met an 18-year-old in my life, Rob, that could sing Old Man River that Will probably could in an exit interview.
Yeah. No, it's great.
I like it. I just think that there's like, I don't know, he kind of looks like a dummy a little bit. Like he's very pasty with the hair. And I'm not speaking ill towards it, but I just think that that voice does not fit with that presence. And, you know, I've received that comment as well. So I totally am game for, I guess, distributing it. But going back to the main question of who I think will provide the best soundbites.
Because you love the characters, Mike. As a Survivor historian, that's your thing.
Definitely. We have our strategy slots. I will not assign a word to character because unless I'm Paul from Big Brother 18. But I'm going to... I think there are a few. I think there are a few people that really stand out. I do think we really outlined them in our draft. But, I mean... I think if we're going for like unintentional sound bites, we might have to go TLS's way again.
Mm-hmm.
Either TLS or Jay. The problem that I have with TLS, and I forgot to bring it up when you picked him in the draft, is that I know in his interview with Josh, he talked about how he gets very, very hangry, and there might be a chance that he just shuts down after like three episodes, which would rob us of gold. Exactly. I mean, I don't know if there's that much going on upstairs as it is, but we're going to close it off after about 9 days or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michelle, I think, could give us some more character stuff. Obviously, Zeke, we talked about. Sunday could be a character. Or Paul could be a character.
Zeke, David. What I will say overall about this
Brett.
Cast, I think there are a couple of people that on paper might come off as... I don't want to say duds, but not as colorful as some of their other counterparts on the season. But I feel like for the most part, there's at least an interesting group. I feel like Ken could be an interesting person to go to for like the ironic quotes, where it's very clear if you saw his video when he tells his story about telling his daughter that he needs to go play Survivor, that he's going to try to do that like George Clooney looks down and then looks back up at the camera type of thing to really play up the dramatics. And I'm really hoping
very
they...
Very specific thing, Mike.
It's a tactic, you know, when you're trying to eke emotion out of it. And Ken is like a Lifetime movie waiting to happen with his lifestyle. So I'm hoping that, you know, the editors are able to trot that out and play with it a little bit.
All right, let's get another question. This is from Sam, who has a question about maybe some of the relationships on this season.
Hi, Robin, Mike. This is Sam from Markham, Ontario. Do you think that there is potential for a cross-generational showmance this season? And who might that involve? Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Whoa. Cross-generational showmance. I feel like that we've had more of the cross-generational showmances on Big Brother. In general, there's way more showmances on Big Brother than Survivor. What's been the biggest age disparity in a romantic relationship on Survivor? Is there anything that really comes to mind?
I feel like Rob and Amber might have had a little bit of an age difference, but I feel like between them...
3 years?
Yeah, and then that's it. Like, Jenna and Ethan are relatively the same age. I feel like Jamie
Ethan didn't happen on the island, and they're not actually the... I mean, that's probably... I mean, they're a good, like, 10 years apart, I think.
That might be the answer off-island, then. But again, then I guess if we're comparing, Eric and Jamie from Survivor China... if you count like Kim and Jeff Wilson from Survivor Palau in that category as well, or are we talking about like official romances?
What was the last Survivor showmance? Am I just completely whiffing on this? What was the last time? Like, we had like John and Jacqueline, but they were like, that was a blood versus water thing. What was the last time that two people got together on a Survivor season?
I mean, Keith and Whitney? Mark. Yeah, Keith and Whitney might actually be. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Keith and Whitney were the last time. Because Malcolm and Angie were, even though Roxy Morris was up everyone's butt about the booby trap, that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think that in Karamoan, we definitely had some stuff with like...
Eddie and Andrea.
Yeah, that was some stuff going on. But really, has it been that long since season 26? I mean, people are probably screaming at their phones.
It's the 10-year anniversary of our last Survivor showmance, I guess.
Really? We haven't had anything? I mean, Blood versus Water was then after that, so forget that. I don't think there was anything going on in Cagayan. Then we had another Blood versus Water season.
And then we had Dirty 30.
Yeah. There was no showmances going on there?
No, I think, you know, people were, you know, doing their sleuthing offline and seemed to think that, like, there was, people were thinking Jen and Joe, some people were thinking, like, Sierra and Tyler, but I don't think anything actually happened.
Yeah, it was like, despite so their Joaquin moniker. Were, yeah, exactly. Were, like, might have happened if that played out for a bit. And then, yeah, then nothing in Cambodia.
Yeah.
And then I guess nothing last season. So yeah, we've really been in a real dry spell, Mike.
I'm personally fine with that, but it can stay dry for all as I'm concerned. But I guess the question is from Liz Markham, Ontario, is will there be a Mrs. Robinson-like relationship happening?
Well, here's my question. 33? All right, so does it count as a cross-generational showmance if, say, Ken McNichol, who's like 33, gets together with somebody from like one of the older,
like Figgy? Oh no, Figgy's like 23.
Yeah, something like that. But I don't know who. Like, Michelle has a boyfriend, so count her out.
Oh, I didn't know that. I heard she. That's a secret. I did not even know.
Don't tell
that.
Anybody. Don't tell anybody. But is it possible? Could you see a connection between the Gen Xers and the Millennials developing?
That's the best chance we've got is in the form of Ken McNichol. Because I honestly do not think any of these other people are going to reach across the aisle and pull someone.
Well, you could
across.
Go the other way. You could go with like, could a Rachel get together with like a JJS, Justin J. Starrett, who's 27?
Yeah, I guess I could definitely see like JJS trying to bait the cougars in a manner of speaking. And these women aren't even cougars to begin with, but I don't know.
I do think over 35 and under 25, I think that's what I've heard.
Is that, if we do the half your age plus nine, does that apply? Does it work? That
half your age plus nine is you can't, that's off limits.
Okay. But anything above that, you can play ball.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so that could work, but I don't know. I feel like when you're set up as enemies from the beginning, and we'll see how long this theme lasts, but I don't know. I don't think we're showing Shades of the Amazon where people are going to tribal council and talking to Jeff about their attraction on the other tribe.
Being baited by Jeff to talk about that. Again, according to the Urban Dictionary, which is my resource on most things, the cougar equation, being a true cougar is a 40-year-old woman dating a man who is 27 or younger. So I was a little liberal on my cougar definition.
Yeah, you'd definitely be on the liberal tribe if we're going with Survivor, what you think a cougar is versus what else you think a cougar is.
In the Cochran's versus Christian season or whatever. All right. So we'll see if there will be a Gen X millennial showmance at some point.
Will it be like a Romeo and Juliet-esque thing, though? Will their tribes orient around them saying this love is forbidden? And will that only further ignite the passion between them?
it would be interesting if it was like some swap where, you know, you had like a, like some pervy older Gen Xer like trying to get with the younger millennial women.
Well, will it be like Trish crushing on LJ in Survivor Kagayama? Will we see like that type of relationship occur?
I don't know. That was more of like an innocent crush. I don't know if Trish ultimately had a thing for LJ.
Huh? I don't know.
She might have just been talking about it.
The cameras don't lie. Tim Duncan's brother revealed that.
Okay. All right. So let's do another question. This one is from Ryan, who wants to know about how we think it will play out for the millennials.
Hi, Rob. This is Ryan from Queens, New York. My question is about the millennials tribe. It seems to me like that tribe is stacked with dorky superfans, Adam, Hannah, Zeke, and even Will. Which scenario do you think is more likely? That group of four works together to pull in two more votes and control the tribe from day one? Or do they all overplay and target each other and end up as the first four voted out of the game? Thanks.
Okay. Mike, the millennial tribe, how do you see it going down? Do they have their act together or are they a disaster?
I'm pulling a real Ron Chan there with that question.
No, that wasn't would you rather.
Oh, that was I thought it was which was more likely to happen.
I guess so.
Yeah, I mean I think the super fans are going to walk in the game, not necessarily wanting to bond together. I mean, I know we've seen that before with like Shireen and Max, for example, but I feel like the super fans are going to walk in and say, great, where's my Patsy? They're going to look at, you know, TLS, and they're going to look at Jay, and they're going to say, okay, ding, 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 these are the people that I want to bring in. Will they target each other is sort of a different question, but I don't see them. If they're going to work together, it's going to be in a big super group, but I don't really see a super fan alliance really forming.
So you think that they are going to be more gunning for one another?
Yeah, because I think they're millennials, right? They're ambitious. They're going to look towards the end goal probably a little too early on in the game, and they're going to say, great, I need someone that's going to function as my ride or die, someone that I know I can outsmart and beat in this game. Who's that guy that's banging his head against a tree? Great, let me bring him into the fold.
I'm trying to think overall on these reality shows, do super fans tend to unite with one another? And my gut thinking, and I haven't done the deep dive on the math on this, is I feel like they don't. I think that for the most part, they sort of just like make their own sides. And I think that there is never a one group of like, hey, we're the super fans. We're all working together.
Yeah, I think they sort of eye each other as a threat in a way, and whether it feels like you're either filling a role that I'm supposed to fill, or if you just say super fans might have the propensity to know more about the game, whether that translates to actually playing the game well is definitely something that's open to interpretation, but you can say, hey, he knows about the game, therefore he's a threat, therefore I need to get rid of him. It's very rare, I agree, that we see a group of people say, hey, you know a lot about the game, I know a lot about the game, let's work together to mutually make it far into the game based on our knowledge about it.
And maybe if it happens, maybe a little bit on Big Brother and not even that often on Big Brother, but I think not the case on Survivor.
Yeah, I guess you could argue what, like Steve and Johnny Mac, but even for a while, they weren't really working too well together. And Johnny Mac was trying to hide the fact he was a super fan to begin with.
Speaking of the millennial tribe, that there is a special musical dedication which came in from Shut Up Tim, who's been very busy all summer long waiting for the millennials and the Gen Xers to come back. Mike, are you interested in hearing from your friend Shut Up Tim?
Always, always. Lay it on me. Oh no.
The millennials met down in old Fiji, wearing their buffs looking neat.
Ugh.
Zeke said, hello, puddle. I'm gonna give it a roll.
No!
Sicky, sicky, narnar, Taylor. Figgy, figgy is annoying. Sicky, sicky, narnar, Taylor. And why is Will's voice so deep?
It's a good question.
It's a great, I mean, I think he's a ventriloquist dummy. That's my theory. Oh, he didn't even move on?
No, that's it. That's fine.
I like when he just like said, like, screw the Gen Xers. Wow.
It was just about the millennial tribe.
I don't know if you hear that noise, Rob. That's Nicole Kidman dying from consumption again at the end of Moulin Rouge.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler.
Yeah, sorry to spoil a 15-year-old film.
Yes, yes.
Wow, okay.
Tim, thank you for curing me of my foolish obsession with music.
I'm ready to not listen to a melody at all for the rest of my life. Sicky Sicky Nar Nar Taylor.
It was worth it for Sicky Sicky Nar Nar Taylor.
Yeah, so, the Zeke and the Puddle stuff might have been...
yeah, we could have just come in on Sicky Sicky Nar Nar Taylor.
Yeah, stick with that. Don't stray too far out of your box there, Tim.
Yeah, we had it with that. That's fine. All right, let's do a couple of these quick questions. Let's check in with our buddy Syrup Guy, who has a question about how long we will be watching the Millennials and the Gen Xers.
What's up, Rob and Mike Bloom? It's Syrup Guy calling in from Canada. We can talk as long as the season of Australian Survivor is about Millennials versus Gen X, but let's get down to the truth. How long is it going to be these tribes before a swap? How many episodes and how many people are going to get voted off before we see a swap? Thanks, guys.
Mike, you have an over-under on the swap episode, or as they say in Australia, the merge?
Yeah, I feel like the Man of Maple brings up a great point. I think it's as much as we can grumble and grouse about this theme, let's look back on Survivor history. These themes really only last at most like 4 episodes. Even as early as your season, the Battle of the Sexes ended in episode 5. So I feel like as long as the preseason is and we've been able to kind of collectively roll our eyes at this theme, you know that as much as they're building it up and actually making it the title of the season, CBS approved, they're going to break it down sooner rather than later. They want to see these two groups really co-mingle and see what happens. So I'm going
to
say...
Are you single and ready to co-mingle?
Jeff, get off of there. Get away. You have your other show to talk about. We kicked you off the Survivor show. I'm going to say 5. I feel like we get down
5.
We get down to an even 16 and then it's the swap.
So then in terms of the start of the 5th episode, that's when you have the swap. So with the 20, you don't think we're going to get rid of 2 people and then do 3 tribes?
There could be a chance that they decide to pull a Cambodia. It met with mixed results, right? Because Angkor, even though they won a couple of challenges, they were pretty miserable sending them off to a beach on their own. Let's hope that if they do the 2 to 3 tribes, that they stock the beach pretty nicely for that third tribe they fabricate, because otherwise they're pretty much screwed.
I think that the cheat that they could do, because they named the season Millennials versus Gen X, and I think that to throw the namesake, I mean, Worlds Apart did have a swap after 4 episodes, like as you said, with going into the 5th hour of the show. I think a cheat you could do is you go down to 3 tribes, but keep 1 tribe Millennials, keep 1 tribe Gen Xers, and then have 1 tribe that's sort of like intermingled.
Okay, yeah, I could see that. It's like making like a Punnett square when doing genetics. You're going to have your heterogeneous tribe while the other ones are homogenous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at least you still have Millennials versus Gen Xers, and because just to throw it away after 2 episodes does seem like it's a bit of a waste to call the season that. You have that great name that CBS approved.
Exactly. Maybe that's why they felt like maybe they were going to get rid of it after episode 3, but after CBS approved. I mean, it's not uncommon. Let's remember Survivor Exile Island. They had that 4 tribe twist that they got rid of in episode 2. Survivor
Cook
Island.
But it wasn't called Survivor 4 Island Twist.
Maybe it was initially.
See, get rid of that name is garbage.
Poor Island Twist sounds like the name of a fruit punch.
Sounds delicious.
Sounds great. But yeah, Cook Islands, I know it was not subtitled Race Wars, thank God, but that they got rid of that after 2 episodes too. So Survivor has done it. You're right. This is the first time that they've actually made it the outright title. So there's a chance that they may decide to mix, you know, 6 people in. But I do feel like either way, we're not going to exist purely in 2 tribes. We're not going to do a straight up heroes versus villains. Let's go straight to the merge with Millennials versus Gen X and let the cards fall where they may.
Mm-hmm. Mike, here's a question for you that's a little bit of feedback on one of the off-season podcasts that we did. This is from Andrew in California.
Hey, Robin, Mike Bloom. This is Andrew Kirk calling from Modesto, California. My question for Mike is, if you were in the first bootstrapped, who would have been your top pick off the board? Great off-season podcasts this year, Rob. I'm looking forward to next Wednesday night. Thanks, guys.
All right, Mike. Did you listen to the first boot draft that we did?
I did. What a fantastic idea. And hopefully you planted a bug in CBS's head to bring some of these people back. Placement be damned.
All right. So, Mike, if you had a pick of who would be your first boot to
represent you with your life on the line.
See, yeah, that I would almost go for the joke, you know, screw representing my life on the line, because I honestly would have picked Zane, but I know that I might as well just be dead.
That was
DOA.
An unpopular pick. I thought that Zane might actually have some capability to win this thing.
Well, I think, you know, people like Zane is just a hot mess, but maybe that hot mess does not translate into legitimacy. It is interesting. I have seen some Zane Zeke comparisons, but it might just be in the name assonance alone.
Yeah, the four-letter Z names, I think.
Yeah, I can't wait for Survivor Zeke versus Zane versus Zoe Zanadakis. Zerviver, they'll call it.
Yes. World War Z. So, all right. Yes, that's your real pick. You're going to go with Zane?
Okay, so if I'm actually picking a first group and I can't pick any of the returnees, right?
No.
No. Does Jolanda Jones count?
You could pick Jolanda.
I feel like Jolanda, even though she ran her mouth, I feel like she's a very strong athletic woman and she might learn to keep her mouth shut this time. So I think Jolanda might be a good pick.
Yeah, I had both of them on my draft team. So, yeah, that was you'd
Where
be on
did
the same
you go
page.
Wrong?
You didn't vote for me, though, Mike, because I did not win in the popular vote. I came in third place.
I wasn't registered.
Yes. Getting a little sicky-sicky gnar-gnar of that.
Again, do not know what that means. Okay.
All right. And then one last question here with Mike Bloom today. This is from John in Tucson, who is a little disappointed with the off-season coverage that we did.
Hey, Rob and Mike. This is John in Tucson. It's been a great off-season and preseason for Survivor podcasts, but I have to say I've noticed one major absence. Rob, why no All-Stars Millennials with Gen X cast with Gordon Holmes? I've been looking forward to it all summer. With that being said, keep up the great work. I love what you guys do. Bye.
My favorite part is about how he was waiting for it all summer. What this says that I think that John and Tucson had the worst summer out of anybody, that this is what he was waiting for.
I thought you meant that he goes, I just had one problem, Rob. And then he took a pause and made me think for a second that his problem with the offensive content was just you.
Yes. Yes.
If we could just remove you from the coverage, it would have been a great offseason.
Right. So, Mike, that were you disappointed as well that we did not cast an all-star Millennials versus Gen X cast?
I mean, it would have been fun, but you also have to think about the logistics behind it. I mean, are you going to put these contestants sort of in stasis with the ages they were in at the time? Because you might take someone who was, you know, millennial age.
Great point.
Yeah, you might take someone who is millennial age in the first few seasons. Now they're in the Gen X era. You know, I don't think Brandon Quinton is going to be a millennial anymore.
That's true. He was a Gen Xer then, and he's still a Gen Xer.
Yes, exactly. He's a Gen Xer through and through. But I guess since it's like based strictly by age, you'll be able to. There might be less variance in there, but there might have to be some rules that you're playing with. But I don't know if you have 6 days, Rob. I guess you could really make it happen if John from Tucson really wants it to happen.
Real quick, Mike, who do we need to have in the All-Star Millennials versus Gen Xers?
Who do we need? Because I feel like Julia Sokolowski could be fun, but do we need her, you know?
She'd
like
be good, but that would be like a good season to bring her back on. You probably aren't going to bring her back for a bunch of different things, but that would be a good season to bring her back.
I feel like Brandon Quinton could be fun if we bring it back as a Gen Xer.
Yeah, we need the Gen Xer who was like a young person, but now is like the old Gen Xer.
Or you could get like some of the Pagongs from Survivor Borneo that are now Gen Xers. Like,
yeah, like Jenna Lewis. This would be a good one to bring her back too.
Exactly. And I want to see Greg Buis play for a variety of reasons, but Gen X Lewis. She'd have to change her name to
like
be able
Lennox
to be
Lewis.
On the show.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about like who were younger people that were from modern seasons, because I guess those are the people that, I mean, Drew Christie, is he a millennial?
Probably. Yeah, I think so. I don't think he's over 30, Drew Christie.
Yeah. I mean, Spencer would be a good one.
He's ideal.
But
he's the preeminent Survivor millennial.
But do you really think, I mean, he's very hesitant about coming back to Survivor in the first place. Do you really think he'll be, oh, great, yes, let me play with some more 20-year-olds versus some more people that will look down on me for my age.
It's a fake season.
Yeah, but didn't you have to, like, realistically say, like, okay, who would accept this and who wouldn't?
All right. Well, Mike, you're getting a little too specific here on this.
Maybe I would say Eliza, but I feel like isn't it the rule of thumb that you snub her on these podcasts?
No, you have to keep her in the mix, and then at the very end,
just cut her.
You know, we really want to get Julie Wolf in there. All right, I guess we'll have to keep Eliza. Honorable mention.
Yeah, Eliza is the Michael Scoopin of these fake All Star seasons.
No, do not say that. Don't say that, Mike. All right. Mike, then some other millennials. Got to get fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas in there, right? She's a millennial.
Oh, yeah. FFSDT, of course.
Yes. Fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas. Huge popular millennial figure.
I feel like, I mean, is Ozzy a Gen Xer? I'm trying to think about, like, who are, like, the biggest, like, presences on Survivor and what generation are they in? Because I feel like Ozzy would be one of those crossovers, right? Because he's sort of like the new ager that just sort of does whatever he wants, but he's a Gen Xer, so he could be our Ken.
Yeah, I mean, Cochran called Ozzy the middle-aged Ozzy in season 23, so that he would definitely be. Ozzy is, I think, 35 currently, so he would definitely be eligible for the Gen X tribe.
What about someone like the aforementioned Eddie or Reynolds, one of those three amigos? I feel like they're definitely fitting that
sort of problem with this. It's like you could really just bring back anybody that's like, with the exception of like Rudy and like Joe Del Campo, like basically anybody's on the table pretty much.
Yeah, that's the most ageist, I guess, will be is drafting this season.
Yeah, so that's why it's not super conducive to the, like, if we had more time, we did a good job of casting or, you know, of doing the off-season podcast, so we didn't have to.
John from Tucson does not believe so. So that's one.
Sorry, John from Tucson. So what are you going to do? All right. So, Mike, we are right here. We made it. We made it all the way from Sia. Taking us all the way.
Wouldn't want to be ya, to quote Jan Gentry.
Yeah, Sia wouldn't want to be ya. And now here we are. So, Mike, we made it all the way to the premiere this Wednesday night. Can you believe it?
I cannot. This has felt, again, like a very long summer. And again, we were sort of when we heard that this theme came around on top of the hot mess that was the Ko-Rong finale. It was an odd Wednesday night. But looking at this cast, looking at some other, I mean, we didn't even mention the Shell twist, which I think should be super interesting. I feel like we have at least an interesting season ahead of us. And there's enough of a big gamut of characters that I'm excited to see what's going to happen come Wednesday.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. So Wednesday night, we'll be glued to the CBS, and you could check out the Survivor Know-It-All, Stephen Fishback and Josh Wiggler. They'll be live at 9:45 p.m. Eastern time to break it all down. And then, of course, all of our coverage kicks off on Thursday with our exit interview and my interview with Meech Fitz coming up. Not Big Meech. That's going to be on Wednesday night. And then, of course, voicemails with Kurt Clark. And then for the Big Brother fans out there, we'll do all of our Big Brother exit interviews. And Jordan Parhar will anchor our Big Brother 18 finale coverage. And then BBOTT right around the corner, Mike.
Yes, I am down with OTT. You know who I am.
you know how I am. Yes, that's right.
I'll admit I only know that reference. Maybe this is the millennial in me, because in the movie Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, they do a big, big joyous number at the end called Joyful Joyful. And they do a parody of that where they say, "You down with G-O-D? Yeah, you know me."
Yeah, and Mike Bloom is the only millennial who has ever seen Sister Act 2.
Ah, no, you are shutting down an entire generation, Rob. That movie is saintly, and I don't just mean based on the Back in the Habit moniker.
All right, Mike, what's the hashtag today?
Dude, should we go with Christians versus Cochran? No. I know it was super early on, but
I feel like that we had something better than that along the way, no?
Let's see, we had Survivor.
Survivor? Gen X Lewis?
Gen X Lewis. There's a whole bunch there. Ventriloquist with a will in the middle of it.
Mike, we talked about the TLS, JJS, and what about CCT?
CCT could be fun.
You down with CCT?
You know me. I always am. And I'm glad you're going to have CC, Kurt Clark, on for the voicemails. I think that's great synergy going on there. Synergy, yes. CC. Sure, we'll put her in there. Let's definitely start this abbreviations going. I at least want to get FFSDT going. If that's the one legacy I leave from this podcast, so be it.
What is it? FS?
FFSDT, fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas.
You down with FFSDT?
Yeah, maybe.
No.
I don't know. It depends on depending on the time of day.
All right. So there we go, Mike. There you go. So excited for you guys to check out the new robhasawebsite.com and everything that we've been busy working on all through the summer. So hope you can check that out. Plus, if you have a chance this weekend, definitely go check it out. Let me know what you think on Twitter. I'm at Rob Sesternino. Of course, Mike is on Twitter at a Mike Bloom type. Mike's been busy podcasting as well. Mike, what's going on the RuPaul's Drag Race wrap up?
Yeah, so myself, Brent Wolgamott, and Ali Lasher have been talking about RuPaul's Drag Race, a show that I only so recently came into or came out of, I guess is the proper expression for that type of show. All Stars 2 just premiered a few weeks ago, so we've been covering that here on Reality TV Wrap Ups, doing our RuCaps. It's been super fun. For those of you that don't know, there's a change in format for the show. Initially, it used to be a show where RuPaul would eliminate the contestants, but this time the contestants have a competition where the winner gets to eliminate one of the people who finish in the bottom. It's sort of like a Big Brother type of, not nomination, but type of elimination. So it's led to some interesting things. At the time of recording this, I have not seen the fourth episode yet, but the third episode dropped last week, and they're finally starting to get a little more cutthroat, which is very exciting. So check that out on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. And over on Post Show Recap, speaking of Kurt Clark, Once Upon a Time Season 6 is about to start up, so we're going to be covering that. And I'll also be doing some coverage of the Emmy Awards, which are airing this Sunday as well, of which Survivor, unfortunately, got snubbed for one more year, but still a good night.
All right, so be on the lookout for Mike's Emmy coverage on Monday. Emmys are this weekend, right?
They are. Jimmy Kimmel's taking the spot. We're back on ABC. We'll see what happens. Emmys are always a weird show where I feel like everyone gets their hopes up only to be extremely let down by either the predictability or unpredictability of said winners, but I still think it's always a fun show. I'm a TV nerd. I guess I'm sort of like in the David Wright camp of being a TV nerd. So it's always fun, even when the results are a little WTF or CCT. So I'm excited about it.
Okay. All right. Great stuff, Mike. Thanks so much, everybody, for checking out. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments of robhasawebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.